Hey, welcome to the Out of Spec podcast. I'm joined by Kyle Connor and our new friend Tyler. Tyler, hey. Would you like to introduce yourself and your YouTube channel? Because we just met you today and found out you do all these cool things.
Well, thank you. My name is Tyler Parker. I run Realistic. I've been doing this for about 4.5 years now, and only recently have been full-time. Previously, I was just kind of balancing that with full-time like sales during the summer and then like college during the rest of the year. And that was a lot.
That was sales like at an automotive dealership? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
You're surrounded by cars basically.
Yes, the whole time. And I was lot porting before then.
Okay.
And so like that's how I kind of like everything has been just me like slowly like working into whatever it was. Like when I was lot porting, the whole reason why I got that job was so then I could get cars to review.
Yeah.
Cause like, I didn't think that they would, you know, take their chance on some 18-year-old, like walking up and being like, hey, can you give me that like $70,000 Audi for like a few hours? Don't worry about it. I'm not going to buy it, but you know,
you never know.
And actually just to start, your YouTube channel is centered around auto, right? You're an automotive YouTuber.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, so I had, I guess, before we do that, let's share your channel name. It's Realistic, but CK.
Yes. Yes, with a CK at the end.
So how'd that name come about?
My roommate in college, when we were like trying to brainstorm different names for the channel, and when I told him it was car related, he's like, man, because he would always make fun of me for being too realistic about things, and like that's just where it came up.
He
just
where'd the realistic. K come from?
Stick shift.
Oh, nice. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Yep.
Classic. Yeah, in the logo, there's this little shifter there. So kind of just made the tie and ran with it.
That's a really good name. Yeah, I like that quite a bit.
Thank
And you've said you've been producing videos for 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And what type of automotive videos do you produce?
So primarily car reviews. I've tried to branch out a couple times, do a few different things. I bought a old Mustang originally with the intention to drift it, and also with the intention to make videos, kind of trying to find out whether or not someone with no experience with cars can just watch tutorials and figure out how to build a drift car. And the answer was yes. Should you? You should, but you really need a safety net. I found myself kind of like really struggling with a lot of things. But I ended up gaining so much knowledge from it. It took so much more money than I ever thought. I remember I'm like, yeah, $5,000 tops.
So this is a 96 Mustang. This is the one you brought here, right?
Yes.
And I have so many questions because I literally was filming a video today and then you just showed up because you know Jordan, I guess, but I don't know anything about this.
Okay.
So, but it's awesome to meet you. It was like, who's this awesome dude who just rolled up in this Mustang that's like kind of clapped out a little bit with parts missing?
Yeah. Yeah. Quite a few things missing. So,
but it sounds awesome.
It runs and drives. I remember, so I bought the car again to drift it. So like I didn't, like I learned so much about car buying at that point. Like, and I really should have known more because I was so like closely tied with the sales, but you know, I didn't get it inspected. I was just like, track car, doesn't matter.
Do you have another car?
Yes. Oh yes.
What is your main car?
My main car is a 2009 Toyota Tacoma.
Ooh, nice.
Right now at the moment.
You would fit in perfectly.
Yeah, you should move here.
Yeah.
Where do you live, by the way?
I live in Indiana. I'm currently in Bloomington, Indiana. It's just kind of south of Indianapolis, college town.
Yep.
Super hilly, very scenic for videos.
Good roads too.
Very good roads. Very good roads to test things. You got like, you know, really windy back country roads. You have extremely rough roads. A lot of them just horribly paved.
Yeah.
Coming here is so nice. Like,
I know you guys are like, garbage.
Puts it in perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like every time I go to Detroit, I'm like, I'm driving over a missile field. And so now the whole middle section of the country in my mind is just terrible roads.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Detroit. Gary is the worst that I've ever encountered.
Gary, Michigan.
Gary in Michigan. I think it's just a combination of like, you know, not putting very much money into the roads and then also winter. Yeah. Lots of snow.
Well, that's what happens in some parts of Colorado as well. How did you end up that out of spec?
Yeah, so let's back up. So I met Tyler at the media brunch before the Chicago Auto Show while you were doing the Inside EV podcast, Kyle.
So I went out to do a podcast, podcast to our show.
Kyle was doing a podcast, and I went to the media brunch just to kind of see the lay of the land, and I sat down at the table with you and your dad, right, Tyler?
Yeah.
And that's where I met you and found out what you did, and then you reached out to me later, and you were like, hey, I'm doing this, you know, you're filming a montage right now of you basically taking this Mustang, this 1996 Mustang, around the country more or less, 6,000 miles or so. And you're trying to answer a question, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the question is more or less, can you ditch your daily? Not so much should you, because the answer is very easy, but can a 1996 Mustang that was bought for $3,000, modified four track use, you know, pretty similar to what a lot of people, you know, get their project cars for, can it, you know, be practical enough to take across the country, you know, fit all these things? Can it be comfortable enough? Like, can you bear it physically? Can it make it?
Yeah. Well, you did it at the perfect time in the midst of a fuel spike.
And that was another thing. Is it fuel efficient? I actually found out it's much more efficient than you think. 29 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, 29. You did a fuel efficiency test in Texas, right? Right
before you came. What did you use to test? What was your procedure?
You're not going to like this one.
Maybe not out of spec test, but
okay, maybe I saw it.
It was, so I basically filled up, both me and my friend went to the same fuel pump, filled it up. He had just a 2017 Kia Forte, which is advertised to get 38 miles a gallon on the highway. And, we both drove the same exact route. Like, I made sure, like, on Google Maps, like, we're going to the same place. And we kind of went to various locations. We actually drove to a really awesome barbecue place called Goldie's, about an hour away from where he lived. Mm. Went, got some barbecue, kind of drove around, and then came back. And then just filled back up, same exact pumps, just to see what the result was. So very, very, you know, primitive way of testing it. But his actually did manage to hit, like, pretty much exactly, even though, I told him, like, you know, run the piss out of it. Like, do what you can to, like, how, like, mimic how a lot of people actually drive their cars.
Like, mm-hmm. Kia Forte owners.
Yeah. and, you know, like, at first, cause we filled it up, and, so it filled up too much. It was actually literally coming out of the top of it. Like, it didn't stop filling. And so I'm like, oh my God, we need to, like, cause we need to make sure, like, this is exact. So we got to, like, run the fuel out, and I'll pay for it. You know, like, this is all my thing. And he, like, was driving so hard that he actually got, like, he was like, why are my brakes not working? He got brake fade in a Forte.
Nice.
Just on some Texas back roads. But
proper. So 29 MPG after the mixed loop. So it was mix of city and highway.
Yeah. Yeah. 29, which I think the stock rating, might have to correct myself on this, is around 25.
Okay.
So, I mean, it got a lot better. And actually, as I've been driving it across the country, the odometer doesn't work.
That's good.
Which,
does your fuel gauge work?
Pretty well.
That's good. That's all you need is a general understanding.
Below quarter tank is a danger zone go there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can pretty much get roughly about 300 miles for 10 or 11 gallons.
So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was very good. Much better than I was thinking.
So this is interesting because, a lot of people mentioned to me, because I've done a lot of road trips in the Miata, and people are like, oh, yeah, I can never road trip my car. And then I see what they drive, and it's like, you could road trip that. People could road trip more than they think. And I mean, your car, let's see, no working odometer, no working speedometer. No.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Theoretically, and no door card on the driver's side. I mean, but
it still rips. It beat Jordan's car. He's just trying to knock your car for no reason. You guys drag race today, and Jordan, you lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thought I had you in the
first
half. This
is the first time the Miata had a chance of winning. And it still didn't win.
We should do Miata versus Smart. That'd be interesting.
I could smoke you in reverse.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and another premise with the series is, like the drag race there, I kind of want to do different challenges along the way, kind of just to test those things in particular. Not only can, you know, will it make it and can it take all my stuff and can I survive, but like, try to do like a gas mileage challenge against a car that, you know, someone would think to be more conventionally good at a road trip, like a Kia Forte. And I think like the, you know, a Miata is a benchmark for someone that's, you know, wanting to go, on a grand tour kind of thing for, you know, a cheaper car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and really just a benchmark in the sport compact, sport roadster class.
And, so that's your road trip. Where are you headed to, Cali and then back?
Yeah. So I'm headed to California with a lot of different stops on the way. I'm just kind of
zigzagging.
Bonneville, yeah. Salt Flats.
And are you seeing other automotive YouTubers or automotive outlets on the way?
I am actually, I think this was the only one where it was someone who had like previous experience. And mostly I've been, just meeting up with old friends, cause I graduated last year.
Mm-hmm. And where'd you go to school?
Indiana University there in Bloomington, Indiana. Yep. And people kind of just moved away, and which I would
as
hope
you
for
do
them,
in Indiana.
as you do. And as I have not yet. And
so why don't you move to Colorado? It's nice here.
Hey, I'm also kind of, you know, driving out, just scoping places. I've always wanted to go to California too.
Yeah. Well, have you been to California yet?
Once.
Just remember, everything's very expensive and they try and take all your money with taxes.
This is
but it's
true.
Very beautiful. They lure
ocean,
you in.
They have ocean and mountains. That's how they get you.
Oh, you could go skiing and then go to Vegas at night. I mean, you could do anything. Like, it's only 3 hours from LA to Vegas
in
a fast car.
Where in California is your destination?
So I'm headed to Los Angeles. That's where I've a couple friends that are in they're trying to get more into the film industry.
Yeah.
And so with that, you basically surround yourself by people that are in it, that are, you know, a director of photography, and you kind of assist them, or you can just be grips on sets, which means, I mean, you're just helping people out on sets to film things, sometimes more major ones. And you meet people through that and you kind of work your way up. A lot of the people
is that your plan?
Not so much. I mean, I do really like film. I like working with cameras. It's part of the reason, like, why I haven't been upgrading my camera, but I've really been trying to learn exactly how to use it, what looks good.
For your YouTube channel.
For the YouTube channel. And also, like, I've done a few, you know, projects for other companies. I worked for a little bit kind of just helping a smaller dealership in the Bloomington area build up their media presence.
Oh, that's
just
cool.
Film some things for them. So
how do you get cars to review? So you have a not a small channel. I mean, it's a pretty sizable YouTube channel, I would say. I mean, and it seems like it's growing now that you're really full-time in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's your strategy now? Like, let's say you want to review a car. What do you do? And then what do you want to do?
So right now, my strategy is, I mean, I get cars from dealerships. And the idea is they get free marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you find you have enough local audience to justify that with the dealers?
So a lot of them, especially one of them, Royal on the East Side, they list all of their cars at MSRP. And I mentioned that in the videos. And so they tell me, like, you know, every now and then they're like, hey, like, this person, you know, reached out because you said this, and that's, you know, it's true. So, it's things like that. And the Mazda dealership there too, that I've gotten a couple larger videos. People recognize the dealership. I do get a lot more people than I thought commenting from Indiana.
That's cool.
You know, it's definitely, it's not something where it's like, you know, generating a lot of sales for them, I'm sure, but it's, you know, definitely a way to get their name out there as well. And it's the actual review itself is, you know, more of a, like, I put probably 30 to 50 miles on most cars, I would say, after filming. The main thing that I've been trying to do, since I can't, you know, do like a super thorough rigorous testing with numbers outside of the draggy. I do 0 to 60 draggies with all of them. I do try to give people like real world impressions. I try to be as detailed as I can. And I try to give people like the information that I feel like a lot of buyers really want to know. Especially considering like reliability too. Like I've talked about that a little bit. I do try to like, you know, if someone say is looking into a new Subaru, a lot of times, you know, you go into these like comments of like Subaru videos, or there'll be tons of people who are like, oh, it's got this issue, this issue, this issue, this issue. And a lot of times it's not even necessarily true. Sometimes it is. And so I try to talk about that and like give the person that's watching the video, because a lot of people do have concerns, longevity of a vehicle. Oh, I've heard this one has failing head gaskets, and I can tell them, oh, okay, no, this model, like, you know, time will tell ultimately. But they've changed like the head gasket material on the Subarus, or they've moved on to a new generation of continuously variable transmission.
And how do you research what those problems might be? So when you go into review a car, do you go on the forums? Do you look up other videos and see what people are talking about?
Forums are one thing that definitely can help, because a lot of times, like when I was reviewing like the used Mazda, there's a lot more stuff. I reviewed a Miata, an NC, and forums were really helpful. You have some websites that are a little bit more, you kind of have to know how to dig on them. Carcomplaints.com. Mm. That's one that can be very inconsistent. However, there's also, I think it's like NHTSA. They put complaints like their
form. Well, the actual NHTSA stuff is on there. Yeah.
And so I kind of dig through those too. See if I can find anything that's actually consistent. Cause sometimes it's like not really like it could be a lemon. Or it could be like it's the same thing, but reported like three times. I've seen that before. But I try to find like, it usually, you know, take a couple hours, really dig through it, because I think that's one concern that a lot of people have. That's with interesting. New cars.
It's always hard for us and, you know, all of us to have this reliability perspective, because, you know, you're spending 50 miles with a car. We're spending a week with a car. Cars don't break in a week.
No,
not some of them do. We've gotten a lot of cars to break, but like some don't, and most don't, most shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And so we don't know how to say, hey, in 7 years with 150,000 miles, this thing is going to be great or bad. Like sometimes you get an impression, but you can't always just go off that impression, and you don't want to tarnish a vehicle because you have an impression that it won't last very well, where someone's going to have a great ownership experience.
I mean, we were talking about this on the way up here. Like there's certain brands that have this stereotype built around the brand of this is the reliability or lack thereof. But at the same time, the car we're reviewing right now could be the car in 10 years that people are like, oh, go buy that 10-year-old such and such. It's the best, most reliable car ever. You just don't know. And so we try to like evaluate cars based on what they are now. And we wish we had that reliability factor. We really can't speak to
it. But we'll do long-term stuff from time to time. Yeah, like we did 100,000 miles on a 3. We're buying this Golf R. We'll do a Rivian. Like we're buying cars to evaluate them. But we have to choose very specific cars. Mm-hmm. And usually we have to buy them. Occasionally an automaker will give us a car for an extended high mileage situation. But that's very... usually 40,000 miles at most is like what a long-term loan would go for.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of cars... The thing is a lot of them won't fail. Like, you know, issues won't happen in those first 40,000 miles. Sure. It'll be notable. But when you have access, or just if you really dig through some things, you will find that there are consistent reports of an issue.
Yeah.
Even in newer model vehicles. One that I found was very surprising to me was the Subaru Ascent. I mean, I did the review, I think I did it 2020. And so it was a new model, you know, year and a half out. Tons of reports of ACs going up, very consistent. Transmission failure, very consistent. And so they take those engines, and I mean, engines and transmissions, they use them on their vehicles. So you can kind of, I won't ever deduce like, hey, this is going to be just a terrible car. Like, don't buy this. Like, I will never tell
someone.
But
you can at least share the facts. You can say, hey, I did some research on this. This is what it sounds like. And that seems pretty cool.
Exactly.
And so... we've seen huge success from automotive channels that have reviewed cars from dealerships. Mm-hmm. Doug, I think, is a great example
of
that.
Forest, yeah.
And Forest, where they, I don't know about Forest, but I know Doug, at least, I think, would prefer to review a car not from an automaker. I know I would prefer to review a viewer car, not for like instrumented testing, but for like an impressions review from an individual from a dealership. Oh, Jordan, could you run and turn the lights back on? This happens sometimes where for our listening audience, we have this 20-minute timer on our lights in our building, and it's all about efficiency. So is your plan to continue using dealership vehicles? do you find that works really well, or is there a broader goal for you? Or I guess, where do you see this thing going? Because you've now graduated school, you're now doing YouTube full time, you mm-hmm. left your job, you're now on this big road trip. It's very similar startings to how I got started in this mm-hmm. business, because I went on a big road trip and started YouTube full time. It all feels like Kyle part two to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm right now still working in the dealerships, and I haven't started branching out to media vehicles yet. I'm interested in it. However, I do, the one thing that I will say with dealers that has been nice is that it's something where, like, I'm local to the area. I can call them if I know them, and usually I do. I can text them, hey, do you have this car? Right now, nobody has any cars. That's right. A major issue. Mm. But it used to be so much easier. I have, a close relationship with them. And
how did you develop those relationships?
So I worked at Royal on the east side. That's where I sold some vehicles for Subaru, Audi, VW. And I worked briefly with another dealership that was in the town, Foreign Auto Connect. And I basically, through east side, there's two other dealerships, or three technically, a Mazda Volvo and then a Toyota dealer, kind of on the other side of town. And through knowing Eastside, I've kind of branched out to them, and I've gotten really close, especially with the Mazda dealership. They're really cool guys there. And so they also can give me like unique perspectives, because they honestly, the people at the Mazda store are like just so brutally honest. When they don't like something, they'll tell me about like what's, their customers like really hate.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, the dealership wants a better car to sell.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I really like working with people like that and dealers like that. And I've reviewed some like personal cars. I did I really like trying to do manual transmission specific reviews. Interestingly enough, I find those do better than the regular. Like if I do a full
review.
Well,
when we get the Golf, review it, come on out and make some videos with it.
Definitely. Definitely. That's probably going to be the closest or nearest way to get into a Golf R, because they're going to be so rare.
Yep. They're going to be hard to get
for a long time. But yeah, I reviewed even my dad's Bronco. He bought
it. Oh, yeah.
He waited so long.
So he's got a 2022 Bronco? 21. Yeah.
21.
What's the spec on it?
It's a 7-speed manual.
Oh, 4-cylinder. Nice.
Yeah, 4-cylinder, Badlands.
Cool.
He accessorized
it. Soft top?
Soft top, yes.
And 4-door.
Yeah, because they were leaking the hard tops.
Except ours. Ours had no issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. It must have just been like, I mean, I feel like it's just like a quality control thing.
I feel like they probably put the better roof on the press car.
They're like, there's like two out of like 300. Yeah. Just put those on the ones we're going to ship out. And then I started out the channel by reviewing other people's cars.
Oh,
primarily.
Cool.
So
how many videos would you say you've done so far?
I think I just passed over 100 not too long ago.
Nice. Congrats.
So we're, I think maybe one, because I've been posting so much more. Like, I mean, seriously, it was once every 2 weeks, and I was like pushing myself to do that.
Mm, but that's when you had a job.
That's when I had a job, where I was like in school full time and with a job.
And what about now?
Right now I'm just doing YouTube, and it's like relaxing to just actually be able to do what I enjoy doing. But also like it became like, I got to a point where when I was doing sales and doing the channel, that I really like sales drained me entirely. Like I would do it during the summer, and partially because of school, but mainly because like I couldn't handle it for any longer than 3.5 months.
Wow,
I was dead by the end of it. And mainly because I was trying to do the channel at the same time.
Yeah. So I guess you must have banked enough, and now you're all in on the channel.
Yeah.
And what's your growth strategy for the channel?
My growth strategy for the channel is basically to make more content, number one, which has been hard with new cars going out, but I've been kind of playing around with the idea of doing different types of videos, like the Mustang videos. Although that... also is more of a, like, it's a passion project too.
Sure.
Cause I'm fully accepting, like, you know, this isn't my usual content. It could not go my way here. But this will be something that, like, right now I have an excuse to do it. Like, I'm, you know, I'm young. I can do this. I can financially afford to do this right now. And like, oh yeah, it's, you know, it's for the channel. I'll write off the
expenses.
You know, so if it doesn't go viral, then I'm not too upset about it. But
you'll go back eventually to Indiana and do reviews and keep going with new cars that show up at dealers and things like that.
New cars that show up at dealers. And I'm going to definitely try to branch out to more because near Bloomington is Greenwood.
Mm-hmm.
And Greenwood and Indianapolis have just a ton of dealers up there. And so, you know, it might just take talking to a few of them to get a hold. And also reaching out to organizations like MAMA that, you know, help with organizing, I guess, other or just YouTube channels.
Yeah, written outlets.
Outlets, all of them, and getting them cars. So that's something that I'm also going to look more into as I'm trying to grow. It's mainly because, like, I'll mainly go into that route once I get back after checking around with more dealers, because if it's starting to seem like, cause I've talked to, you know, it's about a 50% rate. Cause like, you know, I've talked to some dealers, like I was talking to one in actually Irving, Texas, and one in, Los Angeles, just about trying to figure out while I'm on the way, like, I might as well
film
do
some
review.
Stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, it seems to have a positive reception. I got to Texas. I had no time.
Right.
And I'm feeling like I'll probably get to Los Angeles and I might not have enough time. So
the time commitment to film videos is something you really need to dedicate to.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a lifestyle change, because for me, and maybe I took it to the extreme, but it's just videos is my entire life. And there probably needs to be a healthy balance in there somewhere, but I don't know what else I would want to do. Like, this is my passion. Mm-hmm. Like, you seem to have a pretty good balance where you can spend time with friends. You can go meet people at brunches or whatever you do in your spare time. And then we meet cool people.
Yeah. I feel like
that never happens to me. I'm always out filming.
finding the balance is good, but at the same time, it's like, it's sometimes hard. Cause I sometimes am hanging out even with my own family, and I'm like hanging out with my family, but thinking about a video I'd rather be filming.
Sure. Sure.
Totally happens. But, I mean, there's so much content to be made, which is what we get overwhelmed with. Cause there's like, if we are running at peak efficiency, if we were all robots and didn't have to do things like sleep and eat, and
that'd,
like,
be amazing.
Yeah. We could pump out so much content, and there's just so much to be had. I did want to ask you, like, I mean, So the Chicago Auto Show was one of the first bigger shows you've been to, like, as press. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Like, what there kind of piqued some inspiration? Like, did you get any inspiration either from seeing people or seeing things or their cars?
Yeah, you probably saw some content creators that you watch and know and stuff around.
I saw a few. One that I thought was really interesting. There was another channel that's, like, literally, like, the size of mine. So it's not, you know, still kind of growing there. He was out there, Burn Romulus, and, like, just didn't expect to see him. Like, I saw other people. I saw Jack from Savage Geese passing by, and I was like, he
we
looked like
hang
he
out
was
with him for a bit.
Yeah.
He was wheeling a suitcase around. Did you see that?
Yeah.
His orange suitcase. Like,
yeah. I was like, he looks too busy. I don't want to, you know, make it seem like I'm, like, fangirling him or anything. So I'll just kind of let him be. But I saw Burn right after that, and I was like, oh, wow. You know, small world, because, like, you know, I just never would have thought to see some of the people that I did end up seeing there. And I remember my dad was about the, like, you know, I don't really have a camera person. And so he actually originally reached out to me, and he's like, oh, do you want to go to the auto show this year? Like, just the public one. Cause we used to do that all the time. We lived in the Chicagoland area for a little bit. I would say for a little bit, 13 years. he reached out to me. I'm like, well, I mean, I might be able to get press passes. That'd probably be a little bit better. So, like, it just, you know, brought him along as a, you know, camera person. And he helped me out. But, you know, you can see both of us in, like, the photos of some thing. Like, I remember there was a cars.com on the Toyota Sequoia. And I remember I was specifically like, I need to try not get in these photos. I'm going to feel real bad.
No, the plan is always to get in the photos. Always ruin the photos.
Oh, man, I ruined so... Like, I was just, like, there with the gimbal, and I didn't even realize that there were...
You know these guys, Car Confections?
You know, actually, I did. I think I briefly met them.
They're in passing, not too far from you, I don't think.
Really?
Yeah. I want to say they're somewhere in Kentucky or something like that. They're in the middle of the country. To me, it's all one thing.
It's all one to him. But yeah, they're south of you, southeast. And yeah. They're on the bus with us on the way there.
And yeah, and they were like, they do the same thing, dealerships to get cars. They're bigger, though. They have, I don't know how many.
Well, even Savage Geese, they're big. And Jack told me that they have issues getting cars because just Chicago, even, and they're in Chicago, and it's just they don't get the press cars that you get in LA, and even here, like, we get press cars here that they don't get out there.
Yeah, we could do 2-3 a week nonstop.
Yeah, which is really interesting.
That's why I chose Denver. That was on purpose.
Yeah. You would never move to Chicago.
No, I would never. You're kidding me? I want to survive driving
that was crazy. We asked every Uber driver we had, do you like it here? And all of them had like escape plans. They were like, I'm moving away.
I'm going to Uber 17,000 more rides, and I'll have enough money to get out.
The time when you live in Chicago, it's not because you exactly want to live in Chicago, it's because your job's there.
Yeah, I was just like, thank God, I never want to come back to this place ever again. Someone else can do the Chicago Auto Show for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess let's talk cars. We know about your channel. It's really awesome. Everyone subscribe to Realistic with a K.
Yeah.
And I certainly will be watching your videos and subscribing. What do you think about electric cars?
So that's
always the big question.
Yeah,
definitely from you. I definitely expect that question there. And honestly, I'm looking forward to it. I'm very optimistic. I was talking with him earlier about something that just blows my mind with so much potential. The new manual transmission patent that Toyota released that, you know, everything like has been reporting on. They really talked about that patent quite a bit. I think there's so much potential there because, you know, everything is controlled by wire. I know this is a very specific tangent that we're taking.
Oh, take it.
Broad, go for it. Yeah.
Broad topic.
Because I already know I 100% disagree. So let's go for it.
Let's go. all right. So, and I also definitely want to hear your perspective on it because you have way more of an industry insight on electric cars.
I don't know about that.
But when it comes to that new patent and manual transmission, I feel like if you're, because you mean you don't need, you know, 6 or 5 gears even. You need 1, maybe 2 max, I feel like, for an electric car, at least to be like effective. Most don't even have gears other than the Taycan and the, or that, what is the J1 platform or something.
Yeah, so yeah. E-tron GT Taycan, yeah.
And I think that if you can program, you know, a specific engine, so if you're like Toyota and you want to make the car, this electric car, drive like a Supra.
Like a 2008 Corolla.
Hey, like a Corolla. who's to say what it can't do? Because, I mean...
But it's never going to drive like a Supra.
Oh, no. But you can put in, you know, the power band. You can make that electric motor behave like it. And if you have a manual transmission in a car where it doesn't need a manual transmission to begin with, what are you going to lose? You know, like, what are you going to, how is it going to be useful at all or feel fun if you're just full torque every
gear? Well, that's the benefit of an electric motor is you don't need gears.
Exactly.
And I'm the biggest combustion manual transmission enthusiast there is in the world. And we have one commenter who will not shut up about manual transmissions in electric cars. And I'm like, dude, the electric motors don't need it. They could, yeah, 2 gears, I agree. There's benefits for having a split. For heavy-duty trucks, it's really crawler gears, torque multiplication at low speed. And for, you know, J1 platform, it's for high speed, high acceleration. And that car does just pull right up to max. Like,
and I felt that it added character with the Taycan. Like, something that, it's hard to find some character in some electric cars.
You heard it because you put the noise on.
No. I did noise off, noise
There's
on,
no
I did everything.
Character difference between first and second gear in a Taycan.
I feel like I felt it.
No, you feel a boom.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Which
I
is
loved
the
it.
Why would you want that? It's
it,
not designed
it added,
to shouldn't
it was
have
a quirk.
That. You're accelerating. Oh my God. And then you're back to accelerate. Why? What's the point?
I mean,
it's
the
so
application
dumb.
You talked about was really interesting because, like, yeah, electric motors.
And the Taycan's so clunky at low speed.
The electric platforms don't need any of this, but the nerds in us, the Forza players, like Gran Turismo, whatever, you could be like, oh, I could program my car to feel like this car because you could match the ratios. And
this is such a not a good conversation to have.
They call everything in that patent like it's pseudo, like it's a pseudo clutch. So you could make the clutch like bite wherever you want. Like it doesn't.
But then it's not doing anything.
It'd be the really quirky like niche audience that wants to do something weird.
But then just drive a manual transmission car.
What if when you can't? You know,
you'll always be able to.
Because I feel like eventually, yes, I feel like you'll always be able to.
Yeah.
I think at some point, though, it's going to become increasingly impractical. Maybe it'll take 20, 30 years.
Yeah, it's going to be like a horse. We're going to take him to specific places. Mm-hmm. We're going to go rip him around, and then we're going to trailer them back home with our electric cyber trucks. Yeah. I really don't see the appeal in a manual transmission. I've driven manual conversion electric vehicles, and what you really do is just leave them in third gear or whatever it is, closest is to one-to-one.
So if you had to make that motor, and again, you're making it slower. You're making it a worse car.
That's the point. You don't want that because it doesn't add character. There's a lot of character to driving an electric motor in its truest sense, in its maxed out sense. A lot of people don't realize it. Maybe it's just because I've had driven electric cars in a lot of different ways. They have torque curves. It's not just flat torque mm-hmm. all the way up to the max. There are peaks and valleys, and they make great noises, and you have to drive around the inferior qualities of the motor, which there are very odd things. And so I was driving the Volvo XC40 up on my morning loop this morning. I was ripping it up the canyons, and I was like, this is a weird car because you get this weird drivetrain shutter at a certain speed, and it's like, yeah, it's kind of cool. It's got some character. But I don't think adding a manual transmission to any of this is going to make my life better.
I agree. It's super niche, and it doesn't need to make your life better because you will never interact with it because you never need it.
Because it's not real. That's the thing. I feel like it's fake. It's like when we have robots and you'll see that one guy who dates a robot and it's not a real person. You know, it's just be like, that's kind of, maybe he's in love, but that's not a real thing.
Yeah.
That's what this feels like to me.
I mean, I guess it's the same. I mean, like any of the simulators that you see out there, Forza, Gran Turismo, obviously none of it's real. They could make the car in the game like infinitely fast if they wanted to.
Sure.
They could make it have no gears. It could be like anything is possible. But they confine it to these things because they want to make it.
Well, because they're emulating a specific vehicle.
So you could emulate.
That's the point. Yeah. Yeah. So that's like.
But
like,
you would never be able to emulate that vehicle because there's suspension kinematics, there's noise, there's vibration from an engine, there's limitations.
I mean, similar.
And the point of a manual transmission is not that it's fun to switch gears. That's not the fun bit. It's everything else that comes because you've switched the gears. It's because you get this insane drivetrain slack and slop if you don't hit the right RPM range. And the car would fuck if you don't rev match downshift. And the engine would, you know, be screaming in certain ways. And you do have the risk of blowing your crap up, which is kind of like a fun risk. Like,
actually,
you don't want to go 6-to-1.
Funny comparison. You can use a supercomputer to emulate an NES, a Nintendo Entertainment System, and it works. But I did that once, and I was like, this is lame.
When did you have access to a supercomputer?
Well, no, okay, sorry, not supercomputer. Like a modern computer that has like 1,000 times the power of a Nintendo Entertainment System, and it worked. And I was like, this is lame, because part of the magic of the NES was blowing on the cartridges to make them actually work, and like the game wouldn't even work half the time, and the resolution was terrible, and like that's all part of it. And when it just runs, it's like, oh, this is boring. So I could see that happening. But I mean,
it's just like, if you want a manual transmission, buy a Morgan three-wheeler. If you want the rawest experience on the planet. And then if you want everything else, just buy a normal electric car.
Proper.
I don't know. I would be interested to try this situation.
Yeah, because it's not like you have to, because like you said, like even the conversions, you put them in like third gear or something, and then it just drives like
a normal electric car.
But
there's no benefit to switching.
No.
If anything, you risk blowing your crap up if you don't match everything up.
What makes it fun?
Not because, but you don't hear anything. There's no benefit. There's no satisfaction level there.
I guess. I think that if, like, for instance, the Toyota in like 10 years is trying to make a Supra that, like,
then they should make it combustion.
Well, if say like they're trying to make an electric one in particular, I think it could be something cool to try out. And, you know, maybe they could kind of put something in there to where it could mimic what, because otherwise, there's literally no point. If it's not mimicking a power band, then there's no point of shifting gears whatsoever.
I guess my sense, and maybe I'm just totally missing the point on this, but I want to have maximum everything that that car can give me at all times. I don't want any of this artificial limitation.
I mean, yeah, I guess to ask you, an EV enthusiast, how do you create character in an EV?
You can't, or at least not that I've experienced.
Is there anything that can be done? I mean, you haven't experienced anything, but is there anything that you could foresee as like, this is
character? It's just not a very characterful way to move a car down the road. There's no compromise. The thing with an electric car is it's so good that it's not fun. I mean, part of these cars are and a manual transmission. And the reason I love Morgans so much is they're giant pieces of crap.
Yeah.
That you're just trying to hold together by doing everything right.
You're like, I hope I survive this drive.
Yeah, and that to me is the most appealing thing on the planet. But an electric car I've never gotten out of an electric car and gone, that was the best drive of my life. Or I can't wait to get back in that car and continue shredding. Normally what I do is I do my morning loop. I say, okay, I got the YouTube video down. I'm going to go park the car.
Noise
and the
lights are off.
and so I think, I've never once gotten in an electric car and thought to myself, I'm going to go for a drive for fun. I don't think this would just annoy me, whatever you're talking about. But that's not odd because a lot of things annoy me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I could Taycan every morning. I would go for a drive.
It doesn't do it for me.
Really?
It's a daily. Mm. It's a great daily. The best daily.
I guess it depends. If the drive is through town, yeah, boring. Angeles Crest, that's a different story.
I mean, it's very capable on that road, but I'd much rather have a much lower power vehicle to go shred. Now, I love driving the Taycan. I have fun in that car. It's really cool. I've been lucky enough to drive mostly every version except the one you've driven.
the one I've driven, yeah.
Which we need to change very soon.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just not... Electric cars still have not given me, as James May would say, the fizz.
Yeah.
And I don't think they ever will.
Yeah.
You can't... Like, we're driving GT4 RS in a couple weeks. You just cannot emulate that freaking engine sound and the drama and the excitement from having an inefficient powertrain like combustion, where you're only utilizing 30% of your energy and fuel to move the vehicle. The rest is being burnt off as sound.
Perfect.
Also heat and noxious gases that kill people. But like really great noise. And there is something very cool about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not going to be a way to replicate that like visceral feel and sound of it.
No. And I'm waiting till the day where I can experience an EV that I'm like, I can't wait to go for a drive in the morning in this. I go for drives because I have to film stuff. And to get around town, I personally own an electric car for road trips and daily driving because I really enjoy driving an electric car because it gets out of my way. It doesn't annoy me, right? In an automatic combustion car, every time I want to accelerate over there, it's like foot down, wait 3 seconds for it to downshift, clunk into gear, revs up, then it's got to build boost at altitude, and then I'm like on my way. And driving an electric car is just, oop, I want to go there, zip, 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 and it's awesome. And then it's quiet and comfortable and... You can have the most garbage electric car and it still has a very sophisticated driveline because like even a Spark EV or a Mini Cooper SE doesn't suffer from the stuff their combustion counterparts suffer from.
I guess I see where you're coming from. Cause like basically if you're looking at it and you're like an electric car is already, and it is like way more capable and more efficient, any kind of hindrance to that is just completely,
it's just pointless. Annoyance because you're not gaining any fun factor. But then if I'm going into a drive I will hopefully after this Golf comes never not own a manual transmission a day in my life ever again, because I love the compromise and the weirdness of these complex machines that we've gotten to work pretty well over the years.
Even my combustion. Underpowered Miata that lost to a 25-year-old Mustang.
I drive your car around all the time. Yeah. I'm like, Jordan, can I take the Miata somewhere? Because I enjoy it. It's fun. I get in and it's like, this is great. I'm having to work to make this machine move. And that's really enjoyable.
It's a mental reset.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It really is. So you like, I guess back to the question, you like manual transmissions in electric cars, which is weird, but what do you normally think about electric cars?
what electric car would intrigue you?
Yeah,
like, is there anything on sale today that you'd be like, I want that?
Okay, this is going to sound bad. Everything when it comes to electric cars would be going to sound bad. But okay, whenever I saw the Tesla truck come out, I was like, that is completely, like, that is the most obnoxious thing
ever. The semi or the Cybertruck?
The Cybertruck, the Cybertruck. That's the most obnoxious thing, but how much does it cost? Well, let me get the number breakdown on this, because this
So what's your view on Tesla?
You know, I think Tesla as a brand, I can acknowledge, like, they've brought everything so far. And the capabilities, I still think powertrain-wise, or at least on paper, I've driven only a couple of them, Model Y Performance, Model X Performance.
Oh, great cars.
Very awesome. And, you know, it's the Model X especially, I just, like, three rows, usable rows.
Rips.
Absolutely insane. Like, you know, acceleration that most people have never witnessed, and you can do
That's the party trick. It's like, hey, seven friends or six other friends.
Yeah. And then on top of that, it's like a completely different experience, just how you interact with it.
So much better than, like, almost anything on the planet.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of, like you were saying, just something that gets out of your way. Like, you just do, like, you drive.
Yeah, like, I walk up to it, my phone's in my pocket, and the car unlocks. I'm like, obviously my cell phone is a key. Why wouldn't it? I already have this very complex device in my pocket. Why do I need something else? Mm-hmm. It only works 40% of the time, but...
I want phones to be keys, driver's licenses. Like, I'm tired of carrying things.
Yeah, I just want to carry my phone everywhere. I am obviously a huge Tesla fan. That goes without saying. But I think we strike a good balance in both being Tesla fans. You're wearing a Tesla hat.
Yeah,
and also with a Miata pin on it, by the way. But also being able to evaluate other vehicles, I would say, fairly and unbiasedly. Because I'm not biased towards Tesla. I just like Tesla, just like I like Volvo. But I'm not biased. I don't compare everything to an XC40 Recharge.
I acknowledge all their weaknesses, and I still like Tesla.
And what is your electric car of choice? Would it be a Tesla if you had to choose because of network and other things? Or what would you go for if you're like, here's every electric car in the market lined up, regardless of, like, Rimac and Navara, like normal electric cars? What would you go for?
So if it's more normal electric cars, it kind of depends what the electric car needs to be. If it's for me something where I'm like, where I actually do drive quite a bit, I would probably go with something like a Model Y long range. Because I think, like, its capabilities are better than the competition. However, I think it just kind of depends, like, to say which one is best in class, I think a lot of it comes down to just the different approaches that they take. We were talking earlier about the Volvos, or at least in specific, the XC40 Recharge, which is very, very, very much an XC40 that's electrified. And they did a good job with electric powertrain. A lot of the times, I feel like, especially in the past, when something was made to be electric later on, it was... you know, it had not a very good range, or the capabilities were just nowhere close to what the full electric, you know, from the ground up.
Yeah, from a ground up chassis design, yeah.
So I was really impressed with that. And I think those will appeal to a lot of the people that, you know, aren't nerds, that aren't just like, ooh, like, I really want to drive something that feels different. If they're just like, I want to drive something that feels premium, but I also don't want to pay for gas and I want to get in on, you know, electric, I think something like that. Audi also, like the VW group, outside of kind of the ID4, really takes a more conservative approach, I feel like, you know, especially with just like the standard e-tron SUV.
Great car.
Great car. And I think that those kinds of vehicles will, you know, like if I'm looking for more of a premium car, I would definitely go with an e-tron over even a Model X. I love the Model X. I think it's super capable. But if I'm like wanting a luxury car, I think Audi still does it better.
So what about e-tron versus iX or EQS SUV?
Ooh, I don't know too much about the EQS. I remember sitting in the iX and just the insane amount of power you can get with that thing. And you can't get that with the e-tron SUV just yet.
Right. Well, you can get the e-tron S, but then you have a stiffer ride.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 500 horsepower, three motors with torque vectoring. And that's pretty cool.
That is, but still, even the, isn't the BMW like something just...
Well, you can get the M60, that's quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah, that, I think I would probably still have to go to the BMW. I think I remember sitting
even
in
with the looks.
Even with the looks, because I'm sitting in it most of the time.
Yeah,
the
looks for it's got a great interior, doesn't it?
It's different.
I love it. I love the inside.
And for me, it was like seeing it, the press release, I was like, this is so freaking ugly. And seeing it in person, I was like, I'll accept it.
Yeah, I think the back of it looks amazing in person. The rear end of this thing is meaty, but the front end is a little loose.
Yeah, depends on the spec. Black on black with the bronze accents, that's passable.
Maybe. Yeah, I agree. That's how I would spec it.
Yeah, good car.
$90,000
Yeah.
For my spec. I've been looking.
Yeah, not exactly the most affordable, but no, there's a lot of intriguing options. But
so do you get really into the nerdiness of EVs, like 400 volt, 800 volt, the charging stuff?
I haven't done enough. I mean, I do try to think or like dive in more on the charging when I can, but
charging is the most important thing to electric cars, in my opinion.
I think, especially for the owners and the buyers, like that's one thing I think they're most concerned with, which makes sense. It's usually the thing that is hindering them from an ICE vehicle. I've done literally just two electric car reviews.
And what have you done?
The Recharge
Model X and the XC40 Recharge.
E-tron, E-charge. I've driven the Model X Performance because, I was in sales.
Yeah, but so you didn't make the video with it.
Didn't make the video with it. And that one I was going to make a video with, but this was like right as the Plaid model came out.
Oh.
So I'm like, if I review this now, everybody's interested in the Plaid. Nobody's going to care about this. And there's already a lot of Model X videos out there. So if I'm doing one on a model that's now stale, at least in terms of like, it's an awesome car. And I'd love to drive it, but when it takes, especially back then, it taking me 2 weeks to do a video, I was trying to make sure that like if it's a video that I know is probably not going to do too well.
Not waste your time on it. Yeah.
And even, it's weird to say like, oh, I don't want to waste my time with that, completely insane electric SUV. But
that makes sense. Totally makes sense. So in terms of combustion cars, what has you interested?
In terms of like combustion vehicles currently? Yeah.
Ooh. Or just cars in general, I guess. Like what's catching your attention? What have you driven recently that's kind of exciting?
Okay, so most of the cars that I've driven recently, I'm trying to think. Oh, okay, I did actually drive the GTI recently.
Oh, the Mark 8.
The Mark 8 and...
Manual or DSG?
Both.
I saw you reviewed a base one.
Yes, so that was...
That video did well.
And I really liked the base, what it gave you. They've gotten more expensive, but they handle like a more expensive vehicle.
Yeah, they're pretty grown up and like they have a lot of they're like overly dampened.
It is a bit dampened. I still think that they do a good job, at least like, because I drove the 10th gen SI.
Mm.
That was a while ago. I actually owned an 8th gen SI.
Really?
And I really, honestly, when I got into the 10th gen, it was way more capable than my car because I kind of drove them back to back. But it didn't have the same like feedback, and you kind of expect that. And the GTI doesn't exactly have that either, but I did feel that the shifter still was better than what I've experienced with some VWs in the past. I drove the Jetta GLI somewhat recently to that.
Was it the new one with more power or the older one?
It was the... Okay, so it was a 2019. It was whenever
they first
came.
Yeah, so it was the older one. Yeah. So for 2022, they just refreshed it.
Yeah, and then gave it... Those, I have not seen a single one outside of when we were at the auto show. I saw them there, but they have not really been at dealerships up until probably now. I think I saw one on the way here.
Yeah.
Actually driving, but yeah, no, I didn't see
it. I drove it, really liked it. But I would still have a Golf. There were a lot of journalists there that was like, the silent winner is the Jetta GLI. I'm like, well, get the heck out of here. We want hatchbacks, yo.
Yeah. The Arteon was cool.
I think with the smaller...
Arteon's sweet.
The less overhangs of the GTI, especially around back, I feel like it handles like more tight vehicle. Like, it doesn't seem like there's as much motion.
Did the base one have adaptive damper?
No, so that's... Autobahn exclusive.
The Autobahn GTI does not make sense in the GTI.
It, from a price standpoint, no.
Yeah, because you just buy a Golf R.
Yeah, well, if you can find one.
Well, that's the thing. It's like priced like $2,000 less than an R. Yep. And an R gives you all the options plus four-wheel drive, more power, and a torque vectoring rear diff.
Yeah.
And like that's worth like $10,000. You get it all for $2,000.
Yeah. Looking at the... And I can't say because I haven't spec'd out an R more, and so I don't know exactly what features you would or wouldn't get.
Oh, you
with
can't.
The base. It
comes one way.
Okay.
Just everything.
All right.
That's great.
The only thing you can choose is transmission and color, and there's like three colors.
Keep it simple.
There's blue, white, and black, and so, auto or manual. That's it, I think.
And I haven't done too much. What is the, do you know what the MSRP is? Like after
Yeah, they're like 44 or 45. Yeah. Somewhere around there. Yeah,
no, I remember reviewing it, and I just think that the base model coming in, even with the DSG, I think it was around like 32 after destination.
Yeah, pretty good value.
Really? I mean, for what
Yeah, but when you think about the Golf R in terms of value, it's got an RS3 rear differential. It's got Nürburgring crazy tuning on that EA888 engine. Mm-hmm. It's got finally a manual, or still a manual transmission, but we're the only market in the world that gets it.
Really?
Yep. North America is the only market for manual transmission. Thanks to this one lady at Volkswagen who was so awesome. I can't remember her name, but she fought for it. She said, don't even send the R's here unless it's got a manual.
Proper.
Yeah, she's the coolest person on the planet. I feel so bad I'm forgetting her name, but I spent some time talking to her, and she's like a huge enthusiast and drives an R32, and she's like super involved in the community, and she's like, we literally don't want the car unless it has a manual, so make it a manual, to the Germans. And then she got it for us, and we're the only market.
Right.
And so I was like, I gotta buy one. That's the coolest thing ever. So yeah, I guess I don't really know how much it costs, but mid-40s.
Yeah.
And not many options, and I just think it's such an incredible value. And it's one of the only manual transmission cars that has lane centering and adaptive cruise control.
Yeah, and the GTI still had like all those, except the only thing that I think I remember it not getting was like they have like an emergency pullover assist or something.
Right, travel assist, like whatever the safety stuff thing is. Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is an interesting technology. But really one car, if it ever actually can make it to production, but is supposedly going to be debuted later or soon, is the Corolla GR. That has been on their website for over a year.
Well, they just had an announcement about it this morning. I didn't read it.
No, I mean the debut is March 31st, which in a couple of days. So yeah.
All right. I was like, wait a minute. Did they do the announcement already? Did I miss it?
Sorry, that's what I saw.
Yeah, yeah. Just that it's coming 3 days from this recording. So about when this podcast comes out, it's going to be unveiled. Oh, so I can't wait.
Amazing. It's terrible. You can choose one of those two.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Two sound bites. So combustion cars, how's your interest? GTI, you mentioned you liked.
I liked the GTI. The one that I think I have the most interest in currently, like just really want to know is that Corolla GR. Mm. I've really been eyeing something like that, like even for myself.
That's like one hot car.
Yes.
You're a Toyota man because you drive a Tacoma.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think about Genesis?
From my limited experience with them, I love what they're doing as a brand. I like that their design language seems to be different from pretty much any other luxury brand. Like they're really trying to step out. It seems like on paper, performance-wise too, they're for the money. Like you can get, when I was doing the video on the, I did one recently on the Audi A4 and S4, the 2022.
I saw you drag race them. Did 0-60 times back to back. Sorry.
And whenever I was looking at like the numbers from what I got with just the regular A4, it was actually very close to what the G70 with the, or not very close. It was somewhat close to what the G70 with like the 3.3 liter turbo, 375 horsepower. It's something that I think still looks really cool. I think for the price, it's awesome. Yeah. I think the package and how different it is from so many other luxury auto car or like brands out there. Mm-hmm. I think that Genesis has a huge chance to make something different, and I really hope that they kind of succeed more and continue this progress that they've been making.
So what do you see as in larger scale automotive landscape world? What do you see as the future? What are we going to be talking about in 5 years?
In 5 years, I mean, to just get beyond like the, you know, typical, like it's, I think obviously we're going to be talking more about electric cars. You guys will be doing the more and more electric vehicles and continuing what you're doing. I think everyone else is going to have to start focusing more on electric vehicles because that's going to become more of a reality as we see brands investing more money and making these pledges that by 2030, you know, or 2025, half of their brand will be electrified.
And that will never happen.
I think
2021 was the year where journalists learned the difference between kilowatt and kilowatt hour.
Some of them.
I would say at least we've started to see people use it correctly for the first time.
But we still receive press releases and even Monroney's with kilowatt and kilowatt
hour. Didn't the Volvo have a misspelling or a mistypo in it?
Yeah, the official Volvo Monroney had kilowatt and kilowatt hour mixed up. So it's still hard because there's a lot of terminology and a lot of things people just don't understand.
But that's such a basic one.
Yeah, but we'll get there.
I think as more and more, because I mean, when more enthusiasts will be, because I think a lot of right now the electric cars don't have a super, outside of the ones that are just crazy fast, they don't have a very big hold on enthusiasts because they don't do anything that's overtly fun. Like driving it isn't a super rewarding experience. So there's, you know, most people out there that are driving, you know, Corollas and stuff, they might, not have, you know, they're not car enthusiasts. They're just driving that ICE vehicle because, you know, that was a $10,000 car to them, or, you know, it's relatively cheap. It's efficient. It gets them from A to B. So once we can get more enthusiasts interested in electric vehicles, more journalists too, and get them more, because like you're not going to want to learn about something unless you're interested in it. And so it's a completely foreign thing to them. And if something is not very interesting, there's not anything that's peaking, you know, like, oh, okay, this is great. You know, I can get a $70,000 electric Audi. Cool. I'm going to hop in my 96 Mustang. Yeah. So whenever something becomes more like they can see themselves actually driving it and they're actually interested in it, that's when people are going to really start to, like, the public is going to learn more about electric cars.
I feel like we don't have a good electric car education base.
Yeah.
We're on the nerdy side. We're over here. We're like way out in the weeds on talking about motor thermal management, battery pack charging curves, you know, 0-60s at different states of charge, range. And so I think there also needs to be like I don't even think about taking a road trip in an electric car anymore. It doesn't matter if it's a Tesla or not. I'm just like, where do we got to go? Okay, well, I'll just leave whenever. I don't plan it out till I'm on the way. I still feel like the majority of people wouldn't even attempt an electric car road trip, let alone the people who would are planning it out for weeks. And so we need an outlet to educate people on a basic level because we have found our place with the nerds.
Yeah.
We have the very deep coverage on stuff, but that's not the mass market.
No, and the thing is, I don't think you can really truly teach people if they don't want to learn.
Well, I think you can have the resources available for them to learn for those who do
something. That's
and
easy.
There is not a lot of people have attempted and, in my opinion, failed at providing basic information about electric cars. Mm-hmm. And there's not like we should develop a channel, EVs for Dummies, or something like that. Are you stupid and driving an electric car? Here you go.
Hey, I'd subscribe.
I'm just joking.
One subscriber, perfect.
That's all we need. Another channel idea. But I think it'd be really cool to do very basic level, not nerdy, but accurate information.
Yeah, and there's people doing really important work. I mean, our friend Lacey, who we've had on the podcast before.
She is the ultimate person for this.
She does a lot of work with, like, dealerships and brands to bring awareness to, like, the employees and kind of taking, like, a top-down strategy of, we want the general consumers to know how electrification operates, but it has to start with the people making the product that is electrified.
She's one of the best people in the industry.
100%, yeah. And, you know, Tom Malogny's done work with this in the past. Like, people just, there are some people that are advocates, and it's just like the curve is so lagging behind.
Well, it's like automakers are trying to sell these cars. They don't even understand how it works.
Yeah.
Mercedes can't even activate plug-in charge on their media cars.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, what is that? I'm like, this is where you plug it into a charging station. It charges. They're like, well, doesn't it do that anyway? I'm like, no, not in Electrify America. I'm like, holy crap. This is a company that's committing to electric.
Yeah. I'm really intrigued to see how every company does it. I mean, it's like Mazda on one hand, their first electric attempt was really sad, and I'm hoping to see better things in the future because things like the Mazda 3 and CX-30 are cool. But then, like, what's
Just call a CX-30 cool?
Unwillingly. I really don't love it, but a lot of people do, but I'm just...
The Mazda 3 hatch is really cool, and the CX-50 looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's
what happened to the inline 6 and the CX-50?
They're... I heard something recently that they were still doing it, but it, like, it's not, oh no, it's the CX-60 now, is that they're,
oh,
is
the
they're
bigger saying, one gets
the ugly
that.
One, yeah.
Yeah,
that was not so pretty. Because the CX-50 only gets the turbo or non-turbo four-cylinder.
Yeah, the 2.5.
Imagine driving a CX-50 non-turbo here in Colorado. Ooh. Good luck getting out of your driveway.
I'd rather have a it's turbo literally... inline six CX-50. That's my
but
car.
But the inline six won't be turbo.
No.
I was going to say.
But that would be brilliant. I mean, I'm curious to see. I mean, we've already driven eGMP, but the Genesis GV60, like, people keep asking me, would you pick EV6 or Ioniq 5? I don't know. And the more I think about it, I was set on Ioniq 5 until I spent time with EV6. Now I'm like.
Well, you had them next to each other today.
Yeah. I'd like them both. But also, I wouldn't pick either. So right. It's like, would the GV60 would the GV60 be the one I want? I don't know. We haven't tried.
I think there's something about those cars that still feels a bit tin canny to me.
It's getting there.
I like slam the door on the EV6, and I'm like, yeah, that's not a nice feeling.
But it's a really good first attempt. But yeah.
But it was interesting. We drag raced Ioniq 5 and EV6 today.
Yeah.
And the. Which one? They were the exact same speed as expected, same cars, but the EV6 smoked the Ioniq 5 in the braking.
Yeah.
Braked way harder.
Good car.
Tires.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess from your perspective, you're definitely just dabbling around with the dealers right now, figuring out your place. Do you see a future in covering a specific area of automotive? Or are you going to stick to general coverage? Or are you going to try and go to more events? Or what's like the next year plan for this channel that we can expect to see?
So the next year plan, I want to ramp up reviews. I really like trying to... Like, and it's hard for me to just like, okay, like film a ton of videos because, you know, my specific style is a lot as I try to do more film oriented kind of things. Mm-hmm. I really want
making things look nice,
and like give people like a really like good feel visually for the car, along with, you know, descriptions and whatnot to make things kind of tangible. But, I think,
That is literally the opposite of what we do. Wow. Very commendable effort there. I wish we could say the same.
I was going to say, each channel kind of has a different approach. Like, I love so many different kinds of channels. Like, Doug DeMuro, like, you know, I don't know what he films with. But it's not like
a
anything.
Camcorder.
Yeah, it's not anything special.
All his B-roll is iPhone. Yeah. Yep.
All his B-roll iPhone. But, you know, like, we love him for the personality and, like, you know, the quirks and features. He kind of has that thing honed in there. And, you know, like Throttle House, I mean, they're just, you know, super, you know, high definition. And they pay a lot of attention to editing. Very detailed in those shots. And I, as someone who like enjoys film, I watch those and I'm like, damn, that was really good.
They are really one good. Of the best. Them and Haggerty's stuff.
Haggerty, Jason Kamisa. My gosh. Whenever I watch that, I'm like, how is this possible? How do they do this just for like, you know, a
it's
car
because
review?
Their budget isn't YouTube. It's they're an insurance company. Yeah. This is a marketing budget. So not only are they making some money back from YouTube, it's still a marketing budget.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Like, cause I mean, it does.
You could never compete with that as an individual.
Yeah. It's like true cinematic. Like, with
them. Yeah.
But
then again, that Lucid Rivian shoot that they did was only two people.
That's just so impressive.
Two main videographers.
Mm-hmm. You know, really skilled editors too. Yep. But anyway, yeah, I want to continue kind of in the realm of where I'm at. Like, I like how I make the videos. I would like to be able to get a hold of more cars, more new brands. Right now I can do used cars for days and I might start doing more of those. There's a few places that I could go that have more cool niche used vehicles. And I think that could be something that would, like, whenever it starts to be, and now it's finally starting to be warmer, I could review more cars from them. More roadsters, things that they didn't really want to coming out in the winter. And then with new cars, I'd like to get into more brands. It might come down to, in the next month or two, getting into press cars. If that's something that I can manage to pull together there in Indiana. But yeah,
The distance is going to be the hardest thing from the Chicago fleet. If you were in Chicago, it wouldn't be an issue to get certain brands.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll probably just end up being more dealer cars. But I'm always trying to improve presentation. I'm trying to change how I format videos. I recently did a big change in how I formatted them. Just like what comes where,
you know,
really being purposeful about where things,
there's a lot of thought that goes into this. Have we ever thought about what goes into video?
Kyle's allergic to the planning.
Yeah, I'm just impressed. I mean, I'm really blown away by the effort you're really putting in. We all got to subscribe.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Because don't watch us, that's for sure. Hey. I'm like, what am I going to do tonight? I don't know. Edit something.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, there's definitely more approaches that I could do that would, I think, be, because I mean, honestly, content creation, just getting things out there and doing a good job at it, whether or not the quality or like, you know, you're spending all this time to get the, you know, these specific film details right, I think that is, you know, going to be more important, just getting it out there and getting it right. I just personally, trying to establish a niche for myself. This is something that I enjoy doing. And, you know, whenever I see videos from people like Savage Geese and Throttle House, I'm like, yeah, I really like how they do it, but I kind of want to put my own twist on it.
Yeah, you have to.
Talk about the things that I want to talk about.
Yeah, otherwise you don't want to be a copy of anyone.
No.
And there's a lot of new blood in the automotive review world.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think I think you'll have massive success.
Thank you.
Especially now that you're full-time.
Yeah.
And you can do, I mean, you were able to get a channel off the ground by doing a video every 2 weeks. That's pretty impressive. And so now you just got to dig into it.
Yeah. No, no, it's definitely been like the numbers have definitely increased exponentially since I've started doing.
Yep. And you'll have posting. Ebbs and flows and just don't get too attached to the metrics is what I've learned. Oh, man. I know it's hard not to.
Analytics, man.
Yeah. They'll drive you nuts.
They will. They really will.
Yeah, but don't chase it. Just do what you would want to watch. Like your Mustang exactly. road trip. That's the way to do it. You know, and you can be like, oh my God, really, no one ever watched this. Or this was the best thing we've ever done. And sometimes you just have no idea.
And if that does go really well, I'll definitely be doing more things like that. Challenges. Yep. What I would really like to do. Like,
have you posted part one at all or anything like that?
No, I need to edit. I need to edit that. I need to edit the video before. I'm like still wrapping up the video that I filmed while I was in Indiana. So
see, if you don't film such complicated things, you don't even need to edit.
I know. I do.
I edit on my iPhone half the videos. I'll just lay in bed and arrange the clips and then just YouTube. When we're filming on shoots like at CES or whatever, like we're on these days, we edit on the phone and just throw it in the backpack to export.
Oh man, I'm putting stuff in After Effects. I'm trying to, you know, track motion, spec tables.
There's a thing, but you know, from my perspective is you'll burn yourself out. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you won't.
He may not because his background is like film.
Yeah. If this is your world, if film is your thing, then go for it and dig into it. For me, I can only speak from my personal experience. I would burn myself out with that. Like, even if I have to add a title overlay in Final Cut, I get annoyed. I'm like, I don't want
to
be doing this.
Just hand it off.
This
to
is
me.
Why we have editors, right? Yeah. So, but then it's like, I've been editing a lot of stuff recently because it's been very short film edit upload and they've been editing other things as well. And I just hate spending time on the post production because my thing is I want to spend time with the cars. I don't want to spend time with
Kyle's passion is cars, not film.
Right.
And your passion is film and cars. And so finding that balance.
Right. I guess I've never had two passions, but that's pretty cool. I only know cars.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But I would say that's a very impressive situation you have there to produce a lot of content full time and make it look nice. We've never been able to figure that out genuinely.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for coming on. I mean, we appreciate you coming on like short notice. Like literally you showed up here and we're like, hey, let's do a podcast. Let's get dinner. Like, let's just have fun. So we really appreciate you coming on. And yeah, we hope everyone follows you realistic on YouTube. And then what social media accounts can we plug?
So I'm on TikTok, just realistic _ on TikTok.
Nice.
It's just jokes. I'm not really, you know, it's not really car reviews, but if you enjoy like cars at all or car content that you might be entertained by it at least.
Yeah.
And then just on Instagram, it's pretty much my personal account, but I've all I do now is videos. So yeah, it's become a channel thing too. And that's just T-Park 3030. So
nice.
Yeah. I post a little bit to that, but mainly just to the YouTube and TikTok.
Awesome.
I will be subscribing to your YouTube channel.
Yep.
And thank you for randomly showing up today.
Thank you guys for letting, because I've never had access to a runway before.
Yeah.
Not many people have, to be honest. That's not this isn't a normal YouTuber thing, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. Because I was like,
it's not like, oh, you hit 10,000 subscribers. Where's my runway?
Yeah.
It's not really how it works.
Yeah.
But you got to run your car down the runway.
Yes, that was really fun. I really thought it was going to get beat by the Miata. So
barely pulled ahead, man.
She pulled it out there at the end.
I just look over and Kyle's laughing. Yeah.
I was like, at the end of it, I was like, that was the slowest drag race that's ever happened.
Yeah, we've been watching like Rivian versus Model S Plaid, and then suddenly there's a Miata and a 96 Mustang on the
screen. It took forever for you to get to the finish line. I was like, wow.
I think I hit 75.
I don't know how fast.
175 in the Plaid.
Yeah.
I don't know how fast I was going.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for coming on. We'll have you on again sometime. And
Back through Colorado.
Do more road trips. Yeah. Bring them.
Review
bring back
all
out.
Of our stuff, whatever we can do to help you. Hey. From my side, love to find new enthusiasts in the automotive industry. So if we can be of any help, please, we would love to be.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Appreciate all right. It. Thanks everyone for watching. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.